Case 16 of the Gateless Barrier. Yun Men's The Sound of the Bell. Yun Men said, "See how vast and wide the world is. Why do you put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell?" Wu Men's comment, "All you Zen students training in the way, don't be victimized by sounds. Don't follow up on forms. You may have realization on hearing a sound or enlightenment on seeing a form. That's natural. But don't you know that true Zen students can ride sounds and veil forms? They see all and sundry clearly. They handle each and everything deftly. Perhaps you are such a person, but tell me, does the sound come to the ear, or the ear go to the sound? And if you have transcended sound and silence, what do you say at such a point? If you listen with your ear, it is hard to understand. If you hear with your eye, you are intimate at last." Woman's verse. With realization, all things are one family. Without realization, all things are disconnected. Without realization, all things are one family. With realization, all things are disconnected. Why do you put on your seven-piece robe at the sound of the bell? Why do you come to the zendo and take your seat at the sound of the han? This question of why is important, but the importance may not be in the answering. The importance is in the investigating. And why do we do this? Why do we set aside time in our busy lives to come and be here? Why do we sit period after period? And important to recognize that all of us do have a sense of that why, and connecting to that, not as a reason, not as a story, but as a palpable experience, is important. There is often a sense of coming home in zazen, in dharma practice, in meeting the world through a dharma eye. There may be a sense of rightness, appropriateness, significance in meeting the world through a dharma eye, in coming and being intimate with ourselves in zazen. And it may be that this is the only thing we can do. On some level, this is the only thing we can do. I often speak of the invisible sign above the zendo that says, "Run if you can." If there's something else that's going to work, by all means, do that. And when it doesn't work, we're here. The longer piece we read this morning says we can't do it by ourselves and no one else can do it for us. Dogen says, Although each individual inherently possesses the way, the gaining of it depends on all of us together. The practice of the way depends on the strength of many. Elsewhere that line comes from a collection from Dogen called the Shobo Genzo Zui Monkey, which is in a book called The Primer of Soto Zen, and apparently Zui Monkey, not to be confused with sea monkeys, is simplified. But it's actually a different set of teachings, although it's the same. And in this book, that Dogen says something really quite sweet. Although it is not easy to teach Buddhism by myself, Dogen says, although it is not easy to teach Buddhism by myself, if we work together with the same determination, then we will be practicing in the way of the Buddhas and patriarchs. Why do you put on your robe at the sound of the bell? Part of it is so we can practice this way together. Without our practicing it together, it does not come forth. And so what are we doing when we're sitting zazen? What are we doing when we're practicing the way? There's a famous koan about Mazu and his teacher Nanyue. Nanyue says to him, "So what have you been up to lately?" And Mazu says, "I've been practicing zazen." What is your intention in practicing zazen? Mazu says, "I intend to become a Buddha." And so Nanyue reaches down and picks up a tile and starts polishing that tile. And Mazu concludes he must have lost his mind. And he says, "Master, what are you doing with that tile?" And Nanyue says, "I am making a mirror." And Mazu says, "You can't polish a tile into a mirror." Nanyue says, "And you can't polish a tile into a mirror by polishing." And Nanyue says, "You can't become a Buddha by practicing zazen." Dogen, I recently discovered, points out, he says that for hundreds of years people have been discussing this case, but everyone is wrong. And the way this case is often discussed about is pointing to the essential already presentness of Buddha nature. What could we possibly gain? Zazen can't make us into any more of a Buddha than we are. This is how the case is often discussed. But Dogen says, no, actually, everybody gets it wrong. It is of utmost importance to polish a tile and make a mirror. He says, you must always keep polishing. Indeed, at the moment a polished tile becomes a mirror, Mazu becomes a Buddha. At the moment Mazu becomes a Buddha, Mazu becomes Mazu. At the moment Mazu becomes Mazu, zazen becomes zazen. And it's not that the tile is dirty. It's not that there's a problem with the tile. It is just that a tile is polished. And Dogen says, polishing a tile is making a mirror. It is of utmost importance that we polish the tile. It is of utmost importance that we practice the Dharma. It is of utmost importance that we sit in Zazen. And we sit in Zazen. We put on our robe. To put on our robe. We sit in Zazen to sit in Zazen. And we sit in Zazen. We put on our robes to honor and affirm the mirror. To entrust ourselves to the reality of the universe. This ceremony of polishing, this ceremony of putting on robes, this ceremony of Zazen. And I want to look a little at this verse here. With realization, all things are one family. I'm gonna shuffle up the lines here. With realization, all things are one family. With realization, all things are disconnected. Without realization, all things are one family. Without realization, all things are disconnected. And it's not that there's no realization. But nothing happens in realization. There are experiences along the way that strengthen our faith in the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors, strengthen our faith in the enoughness of the universe. And so suppose we have a great realization, and then at some point that the moment of having the realization passes, and then we are in the moment of having had a realization before, and the practice in that moment of having had a realization before. So, and it comes up to us, oh no, I really vividly remember that realization, but I'm not having it now. Or, I don't even remember that realization, but I'm definitely not having it now. But the practice in that moment of having had a realization, is just entrusting. Entrusting ourselves to the universe, entrusting ourselves to this one thing that is the ocean of life and death, self and other, entrusting ourselves to ourselves, Zazen to Zazen. In the moment of having had a realization, that is our practice. And suppose you're completely sure you haven't had a realization. Leaving aside whether or not you're right, whether or not that's even an accurate thing arising in the space of your little mind. But let's assume that you're right. The practice is still entrusting yourself to this moment, entrusting yourself to the universe, Zazen to Zazen, the ocean of birth and death and self and other to the ocean of birth and death and self and other. That is the practice. This is what we come to Zazen to do. And it is the same with it's the same practice before having had a realization or having had a realization before. And then there's that little moment of, oh, things are totally awesome. But that is fleeting. Our ancestor, Robert Aitken, in one kind of moment of candor said that he's not sure he's ever had a kensho, a great realization. And for me, I find that incredibly comforting. And thinking about this, I'm not sure I've ever had a kensho. This is not the same statement as I'm sure I haven't had a kensho. This practice of I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe I haven't. Maybe I have. I don't know. And somehow he found a way to practice, and I know his life was enhanced and oriented by and supported by the Dharma. And even if I don't know that, I know that his practice of the Dharma and his meeting of the Dharma with or without a kensho that he has or hasn't had and does or does not know about has been incredibly valuable to me. With realization, all things are one family. And here's the thing. All things are one family. It actually is unrelated to your realization. This is a property of the universe. All things are one family. All things are the one bright pearl. Sometimes James Ford says another way of saying is, all things are part of the great empty family. Emptiness is our family name. And this is the way things are. And we entrust ourselves to this. And without realization, it really seems like things are separate and distinct. For all the world, it seems like whenever I use the bathroom, there's just the one guy who does it. It really seems like it's me. I can bring one body into the bathroom, but not others. Only others can. And does this change with realization? The many and the one, the absolute and the relative, forms and the great empty family, all of these exist simultaneously. None of them are conditional. And so, because this is true, because that is true, we sit zazen, we come to sesshin, we put on our seven-piece robe in the service of all beings at the sound of the temple bell. And we polish a tile. We polish a tile as a tile, because polishing a tile as a tile is polishing a mirror. And so, Yunmen, why do you put on your robe at the sound of the temple bell? The great poet Basho says, the temple bell has stopped, but I still hear the sound coming from the flowers. If you hear with your eyes, woman says, you are intimate at last. So, please be invited to sit comfortably and direct your eyes, should you so desire, up here. And we will come forth into our practice of Dharma dialogue, coming forth with questions, comments, resonances, or anything else. And hopefully Melissa and David will clear up the mess that I've made. Know that if you're still behind the corner here, you'll need to come out to raise your hand.
Paul.
As I listen to your talk, I really appreciate the way you brought the different poems together. Because as I sit here, I can get so busy. I have to talk with this person during the next kinyan. I have to check in with Tenzin. I have to. That's there. And I think this, at least what I'm hearing, this reminder is that each of those become the bell. and here I am, just sitting here, fully here. I have to do this. Bing, here it is. I need that. Just keep ringing that bell, louder and louder. That's there. This hearkening back, and I'm ringing the bell.
Thank you, Paul.
The word entrusting is popping out at me, and I have an image, and the image is of me on the standing on the trapeze, the edge of the trapeze, falling into the net, just dropping myself forward and allowing myself to fall into the net. And the other words that come to mind are surrender and giving myself to something. And that's really all I can come up with. It's just, I'm just falling into the, I don't know what I'm going to say, and here I am. This falling into something. It just takes you.
I think that's an important phrase you just appended at the end to the words of Holly, the teacher. It just takes you. Right? And we're kind of making ourselves available to be taken.
Another image, Holly, is you talk about standing on the edge and falling into the net. Another image for this entrusting is we're holding on to something with all our might, and we're holding on and holding on, and finally we can't hold on anymore and we let go. And the ground is half an inch below our feet. But until we were ready, until we could not do our thing anymore, and then it's done, and we go do our errands.
Christine.
Thank you very much. And I have a question. In one of the readings that we did, what the bell that went off for me, and maybe even in saying this, it's the answer or not, that the Dharma has no preference for failure or delusion. And as I was listening to Paul, I just felt these tears coming because, oh, our delusion and failure, the bell.
Wow. Thank you.
You know, there's such a misunderstanding that nobody so far has spoken about directly, but I think everybody's pointing to it, that's popular in the culture. That if, and I think Josh's talk and our teaching really in general keeps pointing away from that particular teaching, which is that if we do some particular thing, we will fix everything. And it's so pervasive in the culture, and it's so so profoundly cruel. And we do this to ourselves. And I, when I say we, I really mean all of us. You know, that this sitting around thinking, wow, I guess I'm not much of a teacher because fill in the blank, or I'm not much of a student because fill in the blank. And I had somebody recently say to me, so I'm curious about Zen, not a Zen practitioner. How do you get people to stop their minds? And, you know, yeah, it's a really good question. And I said, oh, we don't do that. We don't get people to stop their minds. That's not what we're doing. And she was, oh. And do you still call it meditation? And I said, yeah, but it's a different thing. It's just being with things the way they are. And she kind of went, oh, and then changed the subject. But this is so profound that the mind can't grasp it. The mind can't, the mind is so dualistic. You know, it's always like, well, if I'm thinking about that, I got to talk to somebody, that's not it. And if I'm this, that's not it. And if, but this teaching is that it's all it, and we can't just say, so I'm off to the movies. We also sit, we do zazen, we practice zazen. So it's both at the same time. The mind gets a little weirded out by that. But that's what we're discovering together here this weekend. Thank you.
Aaron.
Yeah, thank you, Josh. That was wonderful. I was just really thinking about what Paul had said. it does seem like the activities are the belt. But for me, it also feels like it is putting on the robe. Mm.
Say just a little more about that, if you can.
Yeah. So the failures. The many tasks to do during Kenya. Just putting on the robe.
Thank you, Aaron.
My daughter asked me that same question right as I was leaving, and I gave her basically the same answer, but I really... the first part of the talk was about, you know, how we all practice together, and I'm struck in my mind about the experience and sort of reality of physical birth, and how when you're pregnant, you don't decide you're going to have the baby, and you really, knowing a lot of midwives and hearing a lot of stories, it's really a totally interdependent thing that happens, where the bodies, the woman's body is involved utterly, the baby's body is involved, the surroundings are involved, all the influences are influences. And having heard so many stories about mothers who the baby just stops, slows way down, and the mother needs help and intuits so much based on, who knows, many things. And when I think of everyone here and I think of, you know, coming here and including everything, the dharma of everything, and along what everyone's saying, the entrustment and the bell, it's like this continual birth.
Yeah.
That never stops.
Thank
and
you.
It's so necessary that, well, not necessary, joyous and complete kind of to be among everyone.
Mm-hmm. And thank you. Yes.
Yeah, temporarily we say, me, I hear the bell. But I think if we look deeper at the matter, it's quite hard to find any separation. You know, what is the child? What is the mother? What is life? What is the tree? All things participate. So we sit, and as we sit, the whole universe sits with us.
The words that we translate as Buddha nature is Tathagatagarbha, and another way that Tathagatagarbha can be translated is the womb of the Tathagata, the womb of thusness. Pierce in the now.
Thank you, Josh. I just wanted to speak to the misunderstanding that Melissa mentioned, that I guess the Zen is a kind of panacea. My trouble is that it's more than just a misunderstanding for me. It's also a powerful desire.
Oh, right.
Which I notice takes many different and subtle forms. I'm always discovering it in a place that I thought was practice or a kind of pure practice, unselfish practice, in my desire that I should just accept reality. I mean, that kind of presupposes arrival at a place that is real. And therefore, ultimately reassuring. Whereas that's not what it's all about. It might not be real. It might could be anything. It is just the suchness of the moment. And you know, I appreciate Josh saying, you know, go and try all this other stuff. And if it doesn't work, we're still here, you know. That's what I do.
I actually said when it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, not if.
Absolutely,
not
but,
if.
You know, if, maybe it will this time. but what I appreciate is that, you know, what I appreciate is actually being here because there is the possibility, you know, of kind of letting go my grip. I think it's only, maybe it's only possible here. I don't know. I mean, that's not entirely true, but there is something that facilitates it here because it's safe, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to be here.
And you know, that distinction between when and if is so important. You have to keep saying if until you know that it's when. And so this has to be all of us. I mean, we all carry this delusion, and I appreciate you saying how passionate it is. And pardon me for saying it's a delusion, because if you're still in the if mind, it doesn't feel like a delusion. But this is what we learn for ourselves. It's so, and we learn it over and over because, as you pointed out, it gets subtler and subtler. Right. There's a teacher who calls this the secret practice, and everybody has a secret practice. And as we go on in Zazen, the secret becomes more subtle, you know, and it has to know, you know, about saving all beings, or really being one with the bell, or whatever it is. And it just keeps getting more subtle until it's just like, oh, every moment is the arising of the fully awakened Buddha. How could that be? Oh, I get it. Then the secret practice takes over, and there's the if again. I'll get that someday, and then I'll be. Don't wait.
I'm really grateful for what you brought in from Dogen, and that, you know, how everybody's wrong about that monster. Because I was making the same mistake all this time. So I'm still trying to wrap my mind around the Dogen's reinterpretation of it, which I just love. And so what's coming up for me, I have a different image, and then you will correct me. What's coming up for me is I was thinking about how hard it is to teach a kid to ride a bicycle. It can be really, really frustrating and hard, and how hard it was for me as a kid to learn how to ride a bicycle. And what I'm thinking is, it's because the kid thinks that they have to know how to ride a bicycle before they can ride a bicycle. And in other words, they have to become the kind of person who can ride a bicycle in order to get on the bicycle and ride it. And you're saying, no, just get on the bicycle and pedal, and it'll be great. And, you know, and what's striking me is that that's what Dogen is saying, is that's the polishing. No, you have to polish that tile. You know, you have to get on the bicycle. And when Pierce talked about letting go, you know, that spoke to that too, that moment where it's just, yeah, all right, off, you know, gravity take me if you need to. But
there's also a hand on the back of that seat oftentimes.
Well, and that's what this whole enterprise is kind of designed for, this, that we're the hand on the seat, right? And then at a certain point, oh, and then we'll cling to that. Now I know how to ride a bicycle. I've had an awakening. And it goes back to what Josh was saying.
My father tried to teach me to ride a bike, and I didn't do very well, but my neighbor said, oh, it's quite easy, you just have to get up at the top of a hill. Yeah. So he had me get on my bike at the top of the hill, and I rode my bike. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Till I had to turn. And then
I'm so heartened by the fact that we can't do it, and we can't do it right. And yet, we roll down that hill until we, you know, get to the turn and then crash. Sometimes we manage to just lean in and keep going. Mm. And for me, Joanne's mentioning birth and how you're intimately involved and totally not in control of the situation. It's
That's
just going to happen through you. There's no escape. You want to at some point, you know, gee, if I could only take a break and catch my breath for 5 minutes, you know, then I could, well, tough shit, you're on with it. And I was feeling a lot of emotions as you were giving the talk, and it was like, oh, gee, you know, I can't, what a failure. And then it was like, wow, I'm just here, and everybody's here, and it's kind of, oh, here. And I'm back into thinking about it.
That phrase is such a great description of the mind of Zazen. You are intimately involved, but not in control.
Now, and I want to just do a little shout out to the not being attached to outcome, because even in the birth process, it sometimes doesn't go the way we expect. There is no baby, living baby at the end. You know, there are all kinds of things that can go, in quotes, wrong, and so painful, and yet we still have to give ourselves over to the process. I remember being with a friend who was going through her baby had died and it hadn't come out yet, and it was a birth process, but without an outcome that we would say was a birth. And yet it was. You know, and all the people who were involved were intimately involved, and there was all this surrender. I also remember when I was pregnant watching a movie with David, with Meryl Streep, where she was pregnant, and she was going to the hospital and got in the taxi with her husband, who's played by Jack Nicholson. I can't remember his name. And she grabbed him and she said, "I changed my mind." And I think, you know, that could happen here. You could leave. Yes. Yeah. You could, but yeah, not when the thing is rolling, when the bicycle is going down the hill. You can't change your mind in the middle of it. And my friend had to keep going with that process until it was completed. And then it was never completed. You know, it's still lingering in all these different ways. So to me, that's what this practice is about. You know, it can't be defined as one, I'm going to get this thing. That's the secret practice. Instead, this being open and flexible. Now what? Now what? Now what? That's the life, the living, the possibility of being fully alive. You know, isn't that amazing?
And the importance of just dusting ourselves off when we crash.
Yeah, or not.
Yeah, I mean, eventually we die.
Yeah, yeah. Really? What?
And the secret practice dies for a moment.
For a moment at a time, yeah. That's right.
Well, let's continue to practice.